quality content wins now. Yeah. You can't hack the system.
I think you just have to crack on, believe in yourself and go and do it.
Your ability to be agile has never been more important.
The right thing to do to say goodbye to a customer is usually because...
Welcome to this special episode of Content in Business, where we take the best bits and tips from the last 3 months of 2024. It's an episode packed with inspiration. We'll include which episode each clip is from and provide links to all of the episodes in the show notes.
In episode one, Rob Lyon gets real about the marketing grind.
Marketing is hard. Even in myself as a business owner, the hardest part, even as a marketing agency, is marketing ourselves. Doing marketing is difficult. It is challenging. It's the bit that normally gets done last because you focus on the operational sides of your business, the functional sides. No business exists without marketing, because without customers, you have nothing. Whether you're selling a service or a product, you always need new customers. And the biggest key for me is about showing consistency. So we'll be showing up every week with a podcast, with content, and we'll be demonstrating to you as we grow how being consistent, being brave, being courageous, and putting yourself in front of cameras as required, talking openly, giving value, will really resonate with people. It's a bit like I spoke to you, didn't I? It's about a really heavy wheel. We're just starting pushing it today, but that wheel will get lighter and it will gain momentum as we keep going. And that is what will help all of you succeed.
Colin Durant covers raising awareness of a need for your service in episode two, a spotlight session.
So you don't want a business that you sell something, but you have to convince them that they have the need. You want to go after people that have the need in the first place and know they have the need, because that just makes it 10 times, well, 100 times harder. So, yeah.
The opportunity with those people is to find a way to make them aware of the need. Again, I work with people that are, you know, that safety companies, for instance, and you mention this safety product to someone and they groan, you know. But obviously, if there was a government incentive to raise awareness of the dangers of the consequences of not having this product, it suddenly, you know, you can start to flip the switch in people's mind to start thinking, actually, yeah, I do need to care about this, you know. But of course, that's a longer burn. That's a slower process. That's investment that sometimes you can't even make. It needs to be the government or something like that, you know, driving awareness and things like that. You know, all of the cars have safety features and all of the, you know, the law says do this and don't do this, but the government still have to put out the adverts and collateral and everything to talk about being safe on the roads and not doing certain things when you're controlling a vehicle and all those things, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I find as well, I can't think of an example right now, but there's also been these so-called new government initiatives that come out and now you have to do this and that. But people don't do it. There's nothing backing it up. They just say, you have to do this. They don't actually follow it up and make sure you've done it. Mm. I mean, it's as simple as people on their phones and cars. They're not proactively checking that people are not using their phones and their cars, for example, you know. And there's other examples, but yeah, there's no, it's just like, yeah, here's a document. These are the checklists that you have to do. But there's no follow up or anything like that to make sure that people are. So I've noticed that definitely over the last few years that these schemes come out and then people try and jump on the back of them and go, oh, the government's saying this, you have to do this. Like GDPR. GDPR is a prime example.
Yeah.
You know, we all thought, oh, great, we're not going to get any spam. Yeah, well, that didn't make any difference at all.
You know? Yeah.
Rob and Sai talk in episode three about the evolution of quality content over quick wins in search engine optimization.
Yeah, do you remember the dark days of SEO where you could say, I remember this quite vividly, I mean, this showing my age, when I think Britney Spears was the most searched term in Google at the time and people would create pages with the word Britney Spears in white on white as an image and there'd be Britney Spears, Britney Spears, because they thought that was a hack. Hacks don't work anymore.
Yeah.
The platforms... I'm sure they're applying AI into their platforms as well in terms of how Google work, but they will be quality content wins now. Yeah. You can't hack the system by putting the right keywords, what you think the right keywords are, on the right page in the right frequency. Right. That just doesn't work anymore.
Well, you know what? People started to think that those hacks didn't exist anymore. But actually, what has been existing is still hacks in a way. Instead of putting Britney Spears over and over again in
the footer or the bottom of the page white on white, hidden away like that. Search engines clocked on and they started to push pages down that did that. So people said, oh, I guess we've got to actually write this content. But they've effectively done the same thing, yeah. is that they will say, here is an article about Britney Spears. Britney Spears does this, and Britney Spears is this age, and Britney Spears is... And it's just Britney Spears over and over and over again. And then even when the search engine says, okay, you're still doing the same thing, you're just saying Britney Spears load across your page, there started to be like a sweet spot.
Yeah.
So this, again, the hack's still going on. This sweet spot of people going, okay, well, it's got to be, you know, 70% of the page has got to have the keywords on or something like that. You know, still hacks of a sort. And what it means is that you might have great content and you're using the keyword frequency rule. And then there's another website or a competitor or whatever that's got poor content and they just using the same tactics as you. So how do you stand out from the poor website when you know that your content is better?
You know, it all will come down to, have you answered the question that the person searching on the likes of Google was looking for? If you do that, you win. And we're going to also give some advice on what that sort of content should be.
So Google have recently released their helpful content update. And what that does is it's AI powered. And it actually, rather than going to a site and having a look if the content, if the keyword appears enough times to think that it's relevant to what the person searched for, it will just actually go to the site now and read the content. And so your site will get shown in a search results page if the content on it actually answers the question, not just, does it seem like the words you're using are related to that question? So maybe it does answer it, but actually does it? And this is where we talk about the developments of AI, understanding a little bit more, being able to read and digest information a bit more. That's how they're using it now. So Google will go and it will look and actually does it answer the question? And if it answers the question, then regardless of the number of keywords or refinement or layout of page or anything, and again, like I say, there's nuts and bolts that you should be doing on your website, should be digestible, should be able to perform, but does the content answer the question? And that is what is going to make a difference as we go forward in SEO. In 2009, the world became addicted to catapulting birds at pigs. In 2012, they became even more addicted to Candy Crush Saga, which has been downloaded almost 3 billion times.
It's nuts, isn't it? I think with those questions, they're easier because you can picture where you were playing the game. Like I was in Manchester with Jenny for one. I remember being in my house in Kenilworth playing Candy Crush, which came after. So it was a bit easier.
Mm.
There you go.
There we go. Always good to learn a little fun fact. That's a bit of trivia for everyone.
It's always fun with Cy and Rob.
Fun with Cy and Rob.
Let's get that written on a t-shirt.
Yeah. Forget content in business t-shirts. No. We get fun with Cy and Rob t-shirts.
Quite right.
In episode 5, Anna Smith highlights the importance of agility as business, culture, and technology changes.
Stay true to your purpose, because everything hangs off that. It makes decisions easier and spending money easier. Know that things don't stay forever. Downtimes don't stay forever. I think we have a little mantra here, which is there's never been a problem that hasn't been solved. Anything in our lives, in work, if you think about it, we're still there. Somehow we solved the problem. So, you know, downtimes don't last forever. Thirdly, I think your ability to be agile has never been more important. I think we're in a changeable world. That's not going to, as technology is advanced, we're all having to play catch up all the time, and you need to be as nimble as possible. I think speak to, you know, over the years, various businesses who whatever worked once upon a time, and you've sensed this frustration, which is, you know, but it was going so well. It's going so well. And people don't want to change their habits or what worked before. It's not your fault. You know, the market changes, businesses have to evolve and pivot, but still stay true to what you are about and where your knowledge is greatest and where your value is greatest. Because I think you know, the world has the ability to be more transactional than ever before. And therefore, if you can't demonstrate value, and that value comes from where your knowledge is greatest, you might have some short-term wins, but not long-term wins. So stay true to what you're about, change with the times in terms of your product offering, your service, how you talk about yourselves. I think that's my advice.
We touched touched on it on a call the other day. On the micro level, things are always changing. But on the macro, generally, things are the same. You know, there's always something going on in the world. There's always going to be some crisis of some sort. Right. There's going to be challenges.
Yeah.
Costs will increase.
Yeah.
There's always the same story. If you can be wise enough and have a good enough vision and a strong purpose, like you said,
I think you're right. When it comes to recruitment, for example, I really haven't kind of disappeared down the AI. You know, I haven't done loads of research on it because fundamentally it's still about people, you know, and we're massive believers in, you know, if clients worry that people are movable, dynamic objects and that's what the risk is for them, really you need people to be talking to these changeable people. And, you know, I read something scary a couple of weeks ago that I don't know what AI platform it is or is going to be or whether it exists or it's in the future or whatever, but saying that candidates will be able to, or job seekers will be able to put a criteria into whatever piece of tech, which will basically then go and identify all the jobs and opportunities out there and just fire a CV off without you having to do anything. Oh my God. Now, don't get me wrong, easy for a job seeker. I have to do things once and then something's doing it for me. But for a client who's recruiting direct or for a recruiter, when you're getting hundreds of interested, whether that's applications or interested people through other channels, it's going to get worse with trusting who's serious. So yeah, being true to, I still believe there's a human factor in recruitment, which is going to be needed more than ever before. I'm not against automation for things, you know, in terms of back end process and things like that, but a bit of, I guess, with you in the creative industry, you know, there's still a place for creativity without AI, although you have to embrace AI in other areas where it's going to be cost efficient for your business.
Rob Lyon reveals YouTube's emerging role in B2B marketing in episode 6.
So I think one element that's very misunderstood is how YouTube has become more of a B2B platform. Well, when I say B2B platform, it's still where people go primarily for lots of their sort of entertainment, you know, watch their favorite YouTubers and the like. But in a recent study, it actually showed that YouTube Shorts after LinkedIn are the best place for B2B content. And it's not something you'd necessarily associate with YouTube, but the fact that you can post like a social media platform, there is Shorts now. They've clearly seen that they can own long form, short form, the whole conversation. And if you can hook somebody within YouTube with a short to be so close to then showing them your YouTube video where probably your hero content lives, is a really, really powerful tool. And obviously Google being Google, as they know, can then use that from an advertising perspective, the retargeting and so on and so on. Google are making some very clever moves very quietly. They're not really promoting shorts, but people in the know in the content space have been talking about YouTube shorts are kind of an undiscovered little almost hack at this stage. So few people are using them. What a tool available to businesses and individuals trying to grow their audience.
The thing with YouTube is there's, as opposed to the other social platforms, it's an intent thing, isn't it, with YouTube? When people are on YouTube, they usually have the intention of finding out something. You know, people use it as a search engine. They have the intention of finding out something or sitting down and watching a piece of content. And so, yeah, if you can, rather than trying to kind of, you know, throw your content in someone's face that is kind of, you know, generally what's done through social, to try and get their attention as they're scrolling, it's a different story with YouTube because there is a level of scrolling. You just scroll through in the updates of the videos and things. But with the shorts, they generally appear at the top. They'll come up in search results. And actually, just to elaborate the points of posts, because the posts are a different thing from shorts again. The posts are like literally like a Facebook post, and you can even post your own video. So you put your video on YouTube on your channel, and then you can actually create a post where you can write some copy and feature your video, which is actually different from just the normal, you know, your video appearing in someone's feed. So again, you've kind of got the social thing of trying to popping up while people are scrolling. But again, there's just a baseline level of intent on YouTube, isn't there?
I'm not quite sure what YouTube's long play is but they're definitely trying to. I think what I admire about YouTube is they haven't settled with being one thing. They are the best place for video content, bar none.
In episode 7, another spotlight session, Sam Iskar emphasizes the importance of continuous learning and active listening.
Never stop learning. I've just continued to absorb more information all the time. I think, oh, I probably won't ever get better at that. And then you see something else, which then leads you to test something else. So it's always evolving.
You know, that's really insightful that you know, you're doing that listening, you're asking those questions, and you're kind of monitoring and examining what others are doing, you know, while, like you say, not letting it completely take over your business and just trying to please everybody. So many business owners and founders fall into the trap of getting really, really passionate about what they do or what they intend to do, and really pushing that through, really believing, and the danger is believing your own hype then and going down the wrong route and all that. Having a vision, having a dream, having a purpose is going to be the key. But absolutely, that listening is really, really, really important. That's got to be a massive contributor, 100%, to, you know, the journey so far.
I think without it, we wouldn't see the response that we're getting. I think it's great. I mean, and also having the empathy, you know, there's so many things that are not perfect with the shop. I don't have prices on clothes. And a lot of people go, oh, I don't see a price. No, just speak to me. Just, I don't have the budget right now to get tags. And that's the truth. And I think people resonate with that. It is a difficult climate. And I'm starting a business because I want to do something for the community. I want something in my local area. But also having that conversation, when I don't have the budget, but actually just speak to me. And I also encourage people to sort of have a barter and negotiate, because I want people to learn that sometimes you don't always have to go with the first price you're given. And it's also teaching skills at the same time, where a lot of people sort of, no, I don't like that. And I'm like, no, do it, try it and see what happens. You might get something for a little bit lower. You might have a good laugh. And I just love that about the shop. And I think that's been one of the best things to see the success and the response.
You seem to be really focused on that engagement side.
I love the engagement side. I think that's one of my favorite parts of the business. I don't want to do it just to speak to four blank walls all the time. I love speaking to people and meeting new people, learning about their stories if they're having a bad day. You know, I really treat the shop as if it's my living room. I've got my little biscuits, got cup of teas. And that's just really part of the way I was brought up as well. You know, I know my mum would be killing me if I didn't have any sort of snacks to give to people or no refreshments. One of the things that I really wanted to achieve was the sort of cozy sort of vibe. One person goes, oh, I'm so cozy in here. And I'm like, perfect. That is exactly what I was going for.
Fulfillment.
I have a saved folder on Instagram, which is just called Cats for Heidi. And then when I go home every day, she said, you got any cat videos for me today? And it's now become, the kids fight over who I do at bedtime because they think that's when they get to see cat funny cat videos.
So you're creating an archive of the best.
There's literally hundreds.
The best cat videos on the internet.
Heidi thinks there is a social media platform called Cats for Heidi because that's what she sees every day.
Business idea. See, entrepreneur.
But there's a theme, but I don't think that detracts from the reaction. So go on. Let's see if it makes you smile.
Let's watch this. Right.
Yeah.
So
thing is, I've seen the my reaction will be less because I've seen that five times a night.
That's the same for me as well. That's the same for me. So if for those listening, that's a cat. No, it's just, I don't even know what the cats do.
It's sort of duetting with a girl singing a bit of Spice Girls.
We've got to put it on again. I'm sorry. We've got to put it on again.
I don't know. I don't know what makes a cat make that noise. That's the bit that worries me. Because it's not a normal cat reaction.
His head's going all over the place. You can't quite see what he's... what he's looking at, but that is, I'll go to him.
Good.
There you go.
That was the reaction I was looking for.
And I'm already brought to tears. That is excellent.
In episode 8 about values, Rob Lyons stresses that alignment between service provider and client is crucial for long-term success.
And it's kind of the basics that I personally believe that every person should. And you know, we always come back to, again, it's respect. It's, you know, it's having manners. It's being humble when you've made a mistake. It's being saying thank you when you've appreciated something. I mean, for me, they're non-negotiables. You're never going to find people that are exactly the same as you. If you do, you win. I mean, there's people we've worked with for, I must be talking like 7-8 years, because we completely align. There's a respect that we don't even need to communicate very often, because they respect me, I respect them. They trust the work that we do. We deliver every time. It's very, very easy. But it's not always going to be the case. And you will have to work with people that aren't completely aligned to you. But there are some non-negotiables that you should stick to. And it's not something I'd really considered before, but there's a terminology of knowing when to sack your customers. It sounds mad, doesn't it? Sacking a customer. But they won't give you what you want long-term. Forgetting the financial returns, they're not going to give to you in terms of your purpose and your why you get up every morning to do your work. And knowing when to say, to walk away from someone is as powerful as when to bring. So we sort of talk about offboarding customers sometimes as well as onboarding. It's very important in the onboarding process that you have these conversations. You ask certain questions. You don't ask specifically sometimes, but you can probe and you can see the way that their team behave and so on and so on. And you get that real feel. But equally, it's very important to communicate on the way out as well. If you do decide to go the other way from a customer, you know, it's very important. The whole end of the journey, it's important for them to understand why you're not aligned. And it applies to product and to services. You know, we are a service business, so we lean into the service and we'll be thinking. There are brands that won't sell products to certain types of people because it's not aligned to their vision and their brands. They don't want certain people driving their cars. They don't want certain people wearing their clothes because they know what they've set up to do and what brands their brand means. And they would see that it goes against their ethics to see a certain person, a certain, even like nationality. If there's some, you know, there's certain instances where, you know, you look at, this is going really high. If you look at like weapons trade and all sorts of things, you know, if you're selling weapons to a certain country to protect them. So you could look at what's going on in the world at the moment. You might support Ukraine with weapons, but you wouldn't then support the other side of that bar. You wouldn't then sell the same weapons to Russia in this instance that you don't feel. And it goes up to that sort of level. You know, the business is business. It gets bigger and it gets smaller. It gets
values.
Equally, some people would close, you know, people politely ask certain customers to leave their restaurant because of the way they're behaving inside, because they're not aligned to their values. It goes from the smallest transaction to the biggest. Where you win is by being true to those values. Being brave sometimes to speak out when people don't.
And remember that the reason that it's the right thing to do to say goodbye to a customer is usually because the time that you're spending trying to maintain a broken relationship or a relationship doesn't work is cost consuming because it's time, and time is money, especially in a service business when you're working for certain hours for a client, and you know that's the basis that you're potentially paid on. The more time you spend, the more money it costs you, the more it erodes your margin than when you make from that client. So keeping that client on board, even if they're a big client, could actually be a false economy.
Yeah, and it's also the detriment of your clients or customers that do align.
Yeah.
You know, there's that part to consider as well. So
yeah, why should the difficult customer get more time than the easy customer?
Yeah.
Phil Hall states that believing in oneself and reducing external noise helps to focus on creating a unique brand. A clip from episode 9.
Believe in yourself, and to kind of really make sure that you try and take all the noise around you away, because so many people, whether it's online, whether it's, you know, LinkedIn content, whether it's friends and family, whether it's ex-colleagues, ex-bosses, that everybody has an opinion and everybody wants to tell you something about how to do something that perhaps they've done a certain way whenever over their careers. And I think it's really important to take that noise as low as you possibly can and just focus on what you want to. You don't want to go out there and create a brand that already exists, right? You don't want to go out and create something that is there and copy somebody else, in essence. Yeah, don't get me wrong, take some advice, listen to people. But when you're on this journey of setting out and building your own brand, you've got to ultimately believe in yourself and what you're doing. Otherwise, it doesn't really matter what anybody else is going to say. If you don't believe in number one, you're not going to make it work. So that would be my biggest piece of advice. Listen to number one, believe in yourself, be brave and take the leap.
Yeah, it's funny what you said there about, you know, you don't want to be like somebody else. I've heard a really great quote of, you know, if you just take from one person, it's stealing. But if you take from everybody, it's research. And that's what I would recommend to people when they're starting. You just look at the industry, look at everything, and you can take from everyone. That's research. If you just take from one business, oh, I want to be like them, that's just stealing. And that won't get you where you want to go.
Yeah, you can burn hours, days, weeks, and months in doing all that type of stuff. And, you know, I've fallen foul of that previously. And I think you just have to crack on, believe in yourself, and go and do it. What's the worst that can happen?
Sy McMahon highlights the value of humility and courage in episode 10.
Building a successful business is about having patience and having wisdom and having a long view on things, isn't it? And Daniel Priestley, the author of Oversubscribed, he said about, you know, putting things in place so that the business is consistent and successful. New ideas will come along. But what one of the tips that he said was about, you know, doing a almost like a survey type thing to say, you know, we're thinking of launching this product within our range. It's a little bit different. It's something new. Going out to the existing audience, maybe even a new audience, and saying, you know, what do you think of it? Or, you know, would you like to be an early tester of this product? And actually getting a flavor for what's the appetite for it? Because if it's a tumbleweed, then you go, okay, maybe that's not a good idea. Maybe we shouldn't risk our business by kind of, you know, going down this route. If you've got a good appetite there, it's something that you can potentially move into. But again, it's a very considered approach rather than snap judgments.
And there's zero ego in that decision, because if there was ego at play, they would have done it regardless. Yeah. My idea is the right way. It took courage to ask, and you had to be humble if everyone said, no, that's a stupid idea.
Yeah.
That's really doing all three of the main skills we've spoken about in one moment.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you could be massively passionate about something, but if it's not... if it's not something that people want, then there's no point.
It takes some courage to put your baby, your idea out there. And for everyone saying, no, that's a stupid idea.
Yeah.
And that person should have some candor in how they gave that information in, but then be humble and say, yeah, maybe I was wrong.
Yeah.
But if you didn't, if you weren't courageous enough to ask your audience in the first place, you could have had a great idea, which you never saw off the ground because you weren't willing to, let alone start it, but at least ask, is it a good idea?
Yeah.
Richard Langford says stick to your guns and set your price to reflect your quality of work and self-worth in episode 11's Spotlight Session.
Profit is not a dirty word. And I think one thing I have learned with all this is you've got to work out your margins and make sure that profit's there all the time. It's hard to do. It is really hard to do. That's why not everyone runs businesses. And that's why I still look and think, well, I can do better. I can do more. There's a way I can progress this business and make more money. Whereas somebody might look at me and go, well, you're really successful. Well, for me, I'll look and go, well, I don't really see that as success. I see this as like, I'm still on the journey of like progressing, if that makes sense. Profit is not a dirty word. And don't be afraid of making your margins and standing your ground and actually walking away from jobs. I've had jobs where people want you to do it for X amount of money. You can go, before, when I first started, it's like, yes, I'll do it because I need the money. You need to build your business. When you actually stand back to say no, because I value my own time and money, I value myself and my business and everything I do at this, and you're asking me to do it for less, I'd rather walk away. And not be in the rat race to do things for nothing. And I think I find that with the work we do, a lot of the time it's like, oh, these guys are doing it cheaper. Well, at the time, sometimes you'll look and go, yeah, okay, I can lower my price. But actually, once you start being established in business, you shouldn't be. If you value your cost at that, that's what you should push forward. And I think the only way you can progress business is by actually standing by that and doing that.
100%.
And not being afraid to make profit, because that's the key in a successful business.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that key message there really is that value. You know, if you know that the value is not in terms of value, cheap value, it's quality value. It's the complete flip side of it. And that's usually the anchor that people place. Is it a price thing or is it a quality thing? You can be a business that's focused on price, but inevitably you will have to be the kind of business that offers low quality. You know, if you're a business that focuses on quality, then you can command that higher price because it's value. It's the value in the quality that people are paying for.
I think that's the key thing. It's making sure the quality is there no matter what. and being prepared yourself to take the hit, because sometimes if it's not right, you've got to take that hit to make sure it's right, because you do a crappy job for one client, you're only as good as your last job. And again, it's quite a cliche thing, but it is. You know, if you do a really bad job for that client, they will never book you on again. You do a good job for that client, you may have 10 bookings ahead, and that might cost you money to do that. And yeah, for me, it's cost me a fortune over the years just making sure. And you take losses, you know, you have people roll on you and all that kind of thing. So that's the key point I would make is just don't be afraid. If you're good at what you do, the money will follow. And like, I'm a stickler for detail and not being afraid to stand your ground, although awkward sometimes in awkward situations. You go, no, that's the cost, and being prepared to walk away for your own, because you value yourself.
Are you subscribed to stay up to date on future Content and Business episodes? While you're at it, follow Si McMahon and Content and Business across social media too.